Video works, audio works. Now all we need to do is just be funny and record something that doesn't suck.
Funny is usually harder.
Funny's way harder. Way harder.
Alexa, and tell me a joke.
What do you call a computer mouse?
What do you call a computer mouse that swears a lot?
I got nothing on that one.
Swears cursors.
I knew it had to be something stupid.
Yeah, if Bill
not
Gates
as stupid as me, but it was something stupid.
It was still stupid. If Bill Gates had a penny for every time I had to reboot my computer. Oh, wait, he does.
There's a YouTube channel out there called Yay Mad. Like, yeah, mad, like Y-E-A, yeah, mad.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's this group of like five people, and they like sit at this table and they have to make themselves laugh. They have to make each other laugh.
Oh, I watched.
And if they laugh, they have to take a shot. Those guys are pretty freaking funny, man. Pretty funny.
They try not to laugh so much. Yeah. They really try hard. I mean,
oh yeah. And then you got the crowd heckling you. Yep. It's those guys are pretty, if you're in the mood, those guys do a pretty good job of making you laugh.
I was looking at Bored Panda is where I'm looking, because Bored Panda sometimes has some really good stuff.
Agreed. So
when the person who invented the USB drive dies, they're going to lower his coffin into the grave and then realize they put it in the wrong way and have to lift it up and put it back in again.
Flip it over.
That one honestly tickles my... Because how many times do you try to plug
it's 50-50, in? Man, but it's just not. It's it not 50-50.
The wrong way.
It's just...
That makes me laugh.
So today. Bad.
I like that one. That is
funny. I love it.
Yeah, every time I try to plug in one of those ports, man. the A ones, not C. C doesn't matter, right? But USB A.
Yeah.
Like every time, it's always the wrong direction.
Always the wrong direction. Just
crazy. So if Apple created a car, would it have windows? These are bad jokes.
They tried to create a car. Spent $10 billion and they got nothing. They gave up.
They got nothing. Not even Windows.
Yeah. Well, they canceled the whole project. That was a real thing. Like the Apple car was a thing. And they, you know.
I think it was forever ago now.
No, they just officially canceled it like a couple of weeks ago.
I thought that was canceled.
Yeah, February 2024. Apple cancels its plan to release an electric car with self-driving capabilities, ending the project that's been in development for almost a decade. The project, internally called Project Titan, was rumored to have been in development for 10 years, with analysts anticipating its release in 2028.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, literally this year, a month ago.
Yeah. It's very, very recent.
Yeah, I thought it was a year or so ago. So there was another car that was canceled.
Well, a bunch of the EV companies are really struggling. Like Fisker is seemingly on the edge of kind of bankruptcy filings. Rivian's doing okay, but they've canceled or put on hold like a factory. The Ford Lightning. Our Ford F-150 Lightning, they've more than halved their production and canceled like I don't remember what it was, over $1 billion like battery factory that they've put on hold or canceled.
Yeah,
as much as everybody wants to shove electric cars down people's throats, they're just not ready.
It takes more resources and more money to make the batteries, and it's more toxic to the environment to make the batteries than the gas that we use to run them today.
Yeah. Well, and the other interesting fact is, Well, if you're going to replace all of those cars with electric cars, you now have to go, mine all the steel. You have to go mine all of that. So even if yes, there's the batteries and all that cost, and we don't have all the rare earth minerals to even do it if we wanted to, but you're also having the manufacturing and heating and all smelting and all the other things that it takes to make aluminum and steel and everything else that goes into building a car. And it's a lot. And, it's almost like it's not actually about the environment. It's more about something else.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to. Just saying. It's the lithium or something else they were saying. Lithium leach fields. They're so toxic that the birds fly into them, and within like minutes, it kills the birds.
Yeah.
How is this good for the environment?
You got the little kids in the lithium mines. Like, we just ignore all of this stuff. I mean, and not that refining oil is like the cleanest thing in the world, but batteries aren't exactly it either. And then you also haven't solved the last mile problem either for electric cars. So even if you were to magically say, poof, everyone has an electric car, well, you still have the charging infrastructure, like the electrical infrastructure that we don't have put together. And look at all of the people that live in apartments. Where are you going to charge all of these cars? 100%. And for anybody that's ever been, I don't know, anywhere in the world that has anything that's public, it will get destroyed. Here's a perfect example. Go to a gas station and try to get your freaking air tire, get your air tires pumped up. If they have one, most don't anymore, but even if they have one, it's probably going to be broken because 100%. Things are always broken.
It is. Yeah.
And so if you're going to create a bajillion
pocket,
you're going to create that many of these public electric charging stations, how many of them do you think are going to be effing broken all the time?
Well, let me think how I'm going
to
word this.
And then how do you even get them all out? Like, actually, you're going to have to put in so much electric, all of these different substations. We don't have half the infrastructure that would be necessary to make it happen.
Well, think about, two things. One is the charging stations. If there's anything valuable in the charging station itself, somebody's going to figure it out and they're going to start breaking them to steal the component. So then, to your point, they're all going to be broken the same as the other things we see. And nobody's going to keep up with fixing them. The second is, like you said, our grid. Look at California. The grid cannot handle the electric cars today. You are not. Right. And if you don't want to use nuclear power plants, you are never going to make enough energy. So you don't want nuclear power plants and you want electric cars. You can't make enough electric. So now they tell you don't charge your cars so that the grid doesn't go down in the middle of summer or winter. Like,
that's right.
You can't have both.
Just pick. It's no big deal. Yeah. It's no big deal.
Just because you want
and it. That's why I
the ovens. Forget the fact that batteries degrade. So they're going to hold less and less of a charge year after year. So your used car economy is gone. Because used cars are going to now require another huge price tag to replace the battery. That's going to be standard in every one of those cars. They also have a temperature sensitivity. If you remember this winter, they had all the cars that got super cold, right? And the batteries drained from the cold and they were stranded on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Right.
Same thing up in Chicago where, it gets so cold that, the batteries just don't want to work as well as they do when it's a normal temperature.
Right. Like you and I got our Jeeps. I put gas in it. I put some gas cans on the back of it. I can take that thing anywhere. It's not the most fuel efficient, but it gets me where I'm going. And I have a lot of trust in that vehicle. I like the electric cars. I love the fact that they're quiet, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But I don't like all the other pieces that come around it because we haven't thought through it enough yet. We have to learn. We have to go slow.
To me, the thing that makes sense, even outside of, except for maybe in big cities where some you know, electric cars make sense. If you're talking about, like, you could electrify all the taxis in New York or London, like that would make sense, yeah, because you can go off site, you can charge them, you can do all those kinds of things in a very easy way. To me, the solution for, I think that could be 25% of the population. For the other 75% of the population, I think the answer really is the e-fuels, where you could have a wind farm or a solar and wind farm in the middle of the Atacama Desert, as far away from everywhere else as you want. It doesn't matter. And you can get all the sun you want and be able to then build e-fuels, which is just a synthetic gasoline, but you need energy to do it. And great, go build yourself a solar and wind farm in the middle of the desert, away from everybody. You can build your e-fuels based on what you're getting from the sun. And then those e-fuels can be delivered just like gasoline, because it is gasoline. And that runs the cars we already have. And those cars are now going to be carbon neutral.
Okay.
So, and you don't have to replace all of them. You don't have to, you're not having to change anything about a lot of the cars that currently exist.
Which, that's a positive, right?
That's a great positive for it, without having to go down the crazy, like, we're going to replace everything with electric road.
Agreed. My question comes to animals, nature. So the wind farms are horrible for birds. They kill more birds than the value we get out of those things. And the countryside, the view of the countryside gets destroyed by these giant windmills now sitting all over the
horizon. I don't know about the view. Like, I think they're pretty. Like, if you ever drive across Kansas. States,
and that's all I see, yeah.
I mean, I think they're pretty. But I think we've also made a... So we've looked at this the wrong way, as far as I see it. Yes, you can have these gigantic ass wind turbines, but wouldn't it be better? And there's already people working on this. I can't remember exactly what they call them, but they're circular. They don't have big spinning blades like that. And you can put them basically on the roofs of buildings. You can, if you're in New York,
that's a good idea.
You can put them everywhere. You could have six of them on top of the building. You could have them everywhere. And it's not, this thing costs $7 billion. It's, oh, well, this thing is a few thousand dollars and it can feed back into the grid we already have. That is a
smarter idea.
Smarter. And it's almost like, again, it's not really about saving the environment. It's about something else.
Well, that's,
and all you got to do is just start following the money and all of those other things to really start to see, like, oh, well, what exactly are you folks trying to accomplish?
Right. If it's for the almighty dollar, the choices that are being made are not actually for the environment, but they're trying to change people's mindsets in a way that they want them to think it is. Here's your rooftop wind system delivers 150% of the energy that solar does per dollar.
Yep.
And it's a tiny little...
Zooks. Yep, that's the company I was actually thinking of.
Yeah, so Zooks is a company that I actually do work with in my day job.
Yeah.
And amazing car, like you said. And I've been in one. When I went to the conference this year, to CES, they had it. You could sit in it. It was like being in a stagecoach. But it's an electric.
Oh, yeah, that's the, okay. My internet was acting up. Yeah, these are the, I remember this one now.
Right, so that's the cars. I'll give you the link here. The newatlas.com is where I found the link for the rooftop energy you were talking about. In their magazine, there's one for Aerodome Rooftop Wind is what it says. And the wind turbine here, motionless rooftop wind generators, is an awesome, awesome idea. Put it on a building in a second for this exact reason. The Zooks.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You can put, if you're in a farm, you can put it on your farm. If you're in the city, you can put it on, your house. You can put it anywhere.
And it's not going to hurt anything. And that's the point. It's not going to kill animals. It's not going to become a risk for low flying anything. Like, there's positives to it. And we can use wind free energy, right? But of course, it won't be free, but free energy. Zooks is interesting. The other link there is it's a company that's building what you mentioned earlier. Give me electric vehicles in the city that I can take to go from point to point. Right. So think of it as a stagecoach or a modern cab where you go out, you ask for one, it comes, it picks you up, it drives you to your next location, and you get out. It's a new version of having the subway or the train without it being an actual train.
Yeah. I mean, I think those work in very specific parts of the city. But here is a problem. I have a few problems with this. Well, I guess it depends on, are these communal or are these singular? Like, is this an Uber? Well, yeah, but if, say, I'm a nice young pretty lady and I need to get from point A to point B and some just random person is going to be alone with me in this car where there's no one else to protect me.
Right.
I mean, that seems like a bit of a potential problem.
Could be. And I don't know if
because if you're in a subway, there's at least probably other people there. Or you can at least make the decision. If you're there by, if you're sitting there by yourself and someone gets in, you can get off. Like, I guess you could do that with one of these two, but
you can. You can speak with it, you can stop it, you can talk to it, from what I understand from the technology that's in it. But I mean, you bring up a valid point, and I'm sure they've thought about it. But, can I ask for one by myself because it's late at night, or do I have to share my ride?
Yeah, because I know that's what Musk was talking about with like the fleet of Teslas, where you're essentially creating an Uber service without the drivers and without need for any of them. Where it's like, okay, this is mine and it's taking me wherever I want to go. It's not a public, kind of this route goes from here to here and you can just jump on and jump off kind of a thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's going
to. And so as long as it's that, I think you're fine.
Yeah, it's not like I don't think it's like a train idea where I have to take it from point A to point B all the time.
Yeah.
But your point of how do I control who's in the car with me is a question I can't answer. It's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah. But if it's yours, then, this is mine until I get out, is a much better, that's okay because, you're paying for the rate to get it from wherever to wherever. And just like with Uber right now, like you can do the Uber, I forget what they call it. That's the Uber share, I think.
Right. Yeah. Uber share is the shared car. Otherwise you just take Uber X or whatever for your own.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think inside of cities, or I believe inside of cities, this would be beneficial. Maybe not specifically this car company, but the idea, the concept, I think is really important. Yeah. The only thing even better, I think, is to remove cars from the cities so that you're creating what Boston was trying to do with like the Big Dig and everything else and get the cars under the city, allow the people to walk around in the city. So it's cleaner, fresher air, less pollution, less cars, less noise pollution, whatever, safer for walking around. And I think that would be nice. And this would help to move towards that format. The problem is if you tell everybody to drive up to the edges of the city and then they have to take this, there's no place to park on the edges of the city. So now you've just moved the problem out.
Well, I think you have to be very clear on where the edge of the city is. And, like Manhattan, I mean, there's a very clear edge, but yes, you can't park right at the end of the tunnel because there's nowhere to park.
Also, of those towns, you might not want to leave your car.
Good point. Good point. I mean, but if you live in New York, and this service exists and it's at a reasonable cost, why would you have a car?
Correct.
Like that, I think that's the point that a lot of people are trying to make is, well, we don't necessarily need a car because I can just take this thing back and forth. But, now that was it a couple of years ago when the Uber subsidies started to go away, you know, because a lot of the money that Uber, like a lot of people don't actually realize this, a lot of the money Uber was raising, they were actually using to subsidize your ride.
Right.
And, you know, I remember the very first time I took an Uber, it was like half of what a cab would cost. And they were okay doing that because they wanted to change your habits of getting in a cab. No, I can save a lot of money by opening up this app. And once that started to run dry, there's actually times where cabs are cheaper now than taking an Uber.
Yeah.
100%. And so it's like, okay, well, is this service actually going to be cheaper? Probably at first. But then what's going to happen once, you know, lots of people, or if the government comes and says, well, guess what? You can't drive in Manhattan anymore. The only thing that's allowed are these autonomous, you know, vehicles that are electric that, you know, can only drive in these particular lanes or whatever. Like there's gonna be a bunch of stipulations to it, or you have to get on the train.
Right.
Okay. Well, now what?
I think we talked about that in one of our past episodes, right? Wasn't that part of the shitification or one of those?
I think so. Yeah.
Where we were being lured into becoming dependent on an environment or a product to only have it used against us once everyone moved over.
That's right. I mean, yeah, because we made the correlation between like Amazon, where I think I can't remember the exact stat, but it's something like 80% of people don't even check anywhere else outside of Amazon when they're price checking things. And it's like, oh, okay, well now Amazon can use that to now start beating up the consumer or the seller and saying, oh, well, you know, this is where all of the buyers are. Here's all the data.
Yep.
Then, you know, now they're squeezing them. Then they squeeze you. And it's all, you know, then they just start squeezing both. And now they make a bunch of money and you have exactly what we have.
Benefits. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The benefits that you had up front are gone.
Yep.
Because prices on Amazon are not nearly as cheap as they used to be.
For some products, the products that are, you're getting from someplace in China and it's made really cheaply and they might last a couple weeks if you're lucky or a couple months. I know I got some under counter lights that looked like they were fine and they were inexpensive. I wanted to test it out. They literally lasted 3 days. I had them send me another pair. That one lasted 2 days. And they wouldn't let me return them. So it was an eye opener, I guess.
That's right. Absolute eye opener. But you know what else is an eye opener?
What do you got?
Apple Vision Pro. They used it in some kind of surgery. That's what I hear.
Yeah, did you see that article? It's. I don't know if I'd want to be the first person to have my doctor say, well, we're going to use the Vision Pro to do your spinal surgery. You know, I'll pass. Let me be number two, at least.
Just don't tell me. Maybe. I don't know. Because if you're having spinal surgery, things are not looking good for you already. But I'd love to know more about what they're actually doing. Does it actually say how they actually used it?
A team used mixed reality headset to assist in two microsurgical spine procedures at Cromwell Hospital in London. And it was a scrub nurse who donned the headset to help assist them. So how is the nurse helping to assist? Proficiency. It's definitely something to maybe look into. The concept of being able to see things and see things in 3D is really interesting. But
They don't give a ton of details.
A robotic arm, or am I just doing a visualization? Because remember, they have the robotics they've been using for years doing robotic surgery this way, remote surgery. So
yeah,
it's just the next version of doing the robotic surgery. It does say in here. Mako Smart Robotics developed an app tailored for surgeons conducting knee and hip replacements. So is this really just the next version of that?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Because if you're assisting, you know, how can they look up other information, be able to provide information and everything else to the doctor while still having the ability to be there and give them. So what it kind of seems like.
Yeah. I think we're going to see it more and more, especially since everything is done remote. Everything everyone's doing is pretty much remote. It'll be like the movies where you'll go into some pod somewhere and you'll lay down and your doctor will be somewhere in the world and he'll do the surgery on you and not even be near you.
I mean, like you said, that we're already doing some of that. And I think you'll see more and more of that as these things become more and more specialized. It's going to be just a thing that we're going to get used to. That, you know, us folks that still remember the pre-internet age would probably struggle with to think about in some ways. It's just the way of the world.
Yeah. And growing up in it, I think will definitely be different than, you know, a bunch of us older people that are watching it skeptically. I think I made up a word too, but...
I make up words all the time. A equals in camera, A equals automatic.
There you go.
That's my reality. And that's what I'm sticking to.
Adjust to it. Yes.
The camera should absolutely adjust to it. And come on, man. Like, what is wrong with you?
Exactly. Mm. I also saw when we were making our notes for the show here, we had got our friend David had posted an interesting article. I was trying to read through it, but the link I have is to the Yahoo post.
Yeah, that's the one that'll give you a, you know, you can basically kind of summarize this whole thing up into like AI is going to completely collapse the world economy. It is going to, all of our jobs are going to be replaced. We're only going to work a day or two, maybe a week, and AI is just going to do the rest. And we're either going to turn into this dystopian nightmare, or we're all just going to be, I don't know, beekeepers and basket weavers or something.
Don't people remember that's how the Matrix failed? The first Matrix failed because they tried to make everybody happy.
Yeah.
Like they say that well, in the movie.
And I think...
I agree.
Yeah. You know, this guy, of course, is a CEO of some AI company and is kind of leaning very heavily into trying to sell his wares one way or another.
It's all
and
about money.
I just don't believe that, like, I just don't believe that we are anywhere close to what this guy has to say. Like he talks about synthetic employees and how AI is just going to be able to crank out synthetic employees that can just go do the things that you need to do inside of your business.
Yeah.
And my biggest challenge with a lot of this is there's a level of complexity to making a sandwich. Like I just work at a sub shop and I just make sandwiches. And, you know, I guess a good example is like we've been waiting for the burger flipping machine for, I don't know, 30 years. They've been talking about this and they still really haven't perfected it. I know you can go to some shows and you can see, oh, here's this burger flipping machine, or here's a machine that can make you a really nice, you know, cappuccino. But I still have yet to ever see an actual restaurant that has a burger flipping machine or a coffee shop that has a just coffee machine. And the thing that almost all of these things completely discounts is the economics behind it all. Yeah. And yes, you can go buy a burger flipping machine, but that thing is going to cost you, I don't know, 200 grand, some ridiculous number. And it's like, well, okay, I can pay baristas to make coffee. And I'm going to have to pay a lot of baristas to make coffee for a really long time before this ever starts to make me any money. And it's just a bad investment. And to correlate that back to these AIs, well, one, we have no ability to create synthetic employees anyway, but even if you could, how much would they cost? And would they be any good anyway? And
for the first couple iterations.
Probably not after a whole lot more than that, because you have a, I don't know. I know I've made the joke about how I've had bad interns before. Like, this feels what this kind of goes into is, yeah, where it's just these people and they're just going to go do things, whatever.
I do believe if used correctly, AI, like anything, could be a tool to help someone learn faster, grow, you know, scale their skill sets. Somebody that it's voices in your head. That's basically, you know, a version of the voices in your head, and someone to help you. I do think we're trying to be closer than not. When you look at Devin, right? Devin was this thing.
Yeah.
Cognitionlabs.com has, and they have Devin. And Devin is considered to be the first AI software engineer. And a friend of mine sent this link to me the other day, and it's basically trying to figure out how to be a, I guess, a prepare programming, let's say. It could be a pair to help you to learn and grow faster as a developer, or at some point then become your development team for your basic development. And the thing is crazy.
I guess I have just grown super cynical in my life. I bet in a controlled environment, this is going to work really great. But to me, everything, when it comes to complexity, the minute that you start ramping up any level of complexity, the problem becomes exponentially harder.
1,000%.
And if you're doing something greenfield, sure. I think something like this could definitely help you. But when you look across the, especially the enterprise space, how much greenfield development are you actually doing? Like startup, sure. Right. Absolutely. Like something like this would probably be great. And I think for pair programming, it'd be awesome. Maybe even in a enterprise environment. But, you know, two questions. One, how much greenfield work is actually being done? And then two, I'll go back to cost. What is this thing going to cost you?
Right.
And is it going to be good enough for the cost? Because, you know, there's been plenty of studies, in air quotes, that have come out that says Copilot is going to save you 30 to 40%. And, you know, be able to give all of this extra productivity and everything else. And I don't know about you, but I've talked to a lot of folks that are struggling to really realize that they're getting benefits. And I agree, there is benefits, but not those kinds of benefits.
Right.
Like 30 to 40%. And the question is 30 to 40% of what? Is it the time that you're actually typing? Okay. Well, but the time I'm typing is only 25-ish% of my time. So,
right.
So if you take 30 to 40% of that, it's really only about 9%-ish, even if you just round up and say 10%. Right.
So you save me an hour a week.
I am 10% better than I was before by using Copilot, depending on exactly what I'm trying to do. Like, could that get a lot better? Absolutely. Like, I have a couple of things I'm working on that should help make your whole ecosystem better. But to allow for these things to work, you have to remove complexity. And removing complexity is going to be the thing that is going to be the hardest, the most costly, and everything else, because you're removing all of the tech debt and baggage from the last N number of years that your company has been around. For Greenfield, totally different story. But are you going to go take a 100-year-old bank and rewrite everything? Like, we've talked about legacy modernization. Like, it's real hard.
Yep.
And it's real expensive. And so are you going to go rewrite everything inside of your company to use something like this? Not so sure.
No, it's not cost effective at the end of the day. And most organizations that run on some of the older systems shouldn't rip it out anyway, because it's costing them less money to have KLO done to the system than it is to try to rip and replace it. And the cost it will be to maintain and build out the new system, they're better off extending some of their stuff and then figuring out what should be migrated over. Like, you need to be smart, right? But different conversation. When you go through what you were just saying, one of the things that comes back is it's friction. If I can reduce friction with some of these things, then I can get an increase in performance. I can create a happier workforce. I can put these things in place. If I think I'm going to just truly streamline and automate everything, and I'm going to double somebody's productivity with any tool, then I'm kidding myself, because there's so many factors that we don't take into account that get in the way. But if I'm able to gently remove certain frictions, I'm going to see more of a performance increase, and a happier workforce has, you know, happier people work harder, and work harder people get more done. And I didn't have to install anything for that. I just had to make people a little happier.
Yeah. And it's another reason why developer experience is such a big push. Remove the impediments, remove the waste, remove the friction, and you're going to do better. And in where most organizations are right now, you're going to be far better doing those types of improvements than buying something like this. Yes. But what are people going to do? They're going to buy something like this. They're going to buy Copilot, and they're going to just go, you know, like the little meme with the guy poking the thing with a stick, like, do something. And they just want it to do something. And it's never that easy.
Well, we also buy tools and only use 10% of the functionality that's in the tool. So we're going to spend tons of money for this. Not read the instructions. You don't know anything about that, right? Not read the instructions.
No, not even.
And then we're going to wonder why it doesn't work well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this kind of leads into the video we put out this week, which is 5 reasons your developer experience project might fail. And we've already hit on 2 of them. There's no easy button.
Yep.
You need really good product management thinking, which leads into this. If you're going to stand up a tool, great. How do you configure it? How do people use it? What's the process changes that are necessary? All those other pieces. And, you know, a lot of people miss those basic of things, let alone the more complicated problems. And it's a challenge.
Yeah. What gets lost, I guess, in building a strategy is when we build out strategies, it's better to pick 1 or 2 things and double down and focus in on them and spend more time getting the culture bought into it, getting people using it, creating the right documentation and the right practices and principles around it, so it's being used effectively before going on to the next thing. Most organizations try to pick too many bets and try to do them all at once, and everything gets done with 5% of the time everybody has, to the fact that none of it gets done and none of it gets used. And now we've just created a mess and a ton of new tech debt and a lot of unhappy people.
Well, so I named off the first 3, but third in the 5 is requires a new way of thinking. Number 4 is it takes a cultural shift, which you just talked about. Yep. And the number 5 is you can't actually make your developer experience worse, which is exactly what you were just talking about, is adding in just another thing, here's another tool to make it even a complex problem, even more complex, without simplifying your overall ecosystem, you are destined to fail.
Yeah.
And that is the hard work that needs to get done if you actually want to be efficient. If you're just looking for, man, I stood up a tool, I got another thing, it's going to help us. Well, maybe.
Well, and it's funny because as that person being measured to have a lot of tools in place to make people more productive, because that goes back to our metrics and measurements, because are we measuring the wrong thing? Because if they're checking off the boxes saying they installed all the tools, you know, shows that they're being productive. Well, they're actually not productive for the organization, but they can show they got their work done. So measuring the wrong things matters, right? Probably exactly what's happening.
It's almost like we've been doing some research on Goodhart's Law.
And that could maybe be a conversation in the near future.
Yeah. It is. It is. It is. I mean, we'll just start saying that one of the next videos we're going to be releasing is about Goodhart's Law.
Definitely. And, some of our,
but this is a great example of it, of, you know, yeah. If you start focusing in on these wrong things, then you're toast. And, you know, had a very interesting conversation with my friends over at DX the other day. And they have one of the tools they have a survey tool, but one of the other tools they have is called Platform X. And it's every time an event happens, kind of any event, it can send messages to people through like Team or Slack or whatever. Say like, hey, how'd this thing go? And they've been recently using it for Gen AI tracking. So not about hype, not about, oh, well, you know, answer this survey. We're going to get you all hyped up about AI. It's the cool new thing. And now, hey, answer the survey about how much you think that this thing's going to help you. And of course, people are going to, you know, but what they're actually using it for is when they're kind of doing random sampling of when somebody completes a PR, just kind of random, hey, like, did you use any of our Gen AI tools? And if so, like, how much time do you think this actually saved you?
Hey, did it save any time? Did it help? How did it help?
Yeah. And, you know, I know they're gathering data on it. I've not seen any of the outputs, but I am a firm believer that the results we'll get from that are going to be significantly different than a lot of the hype pieces that you're seeing from a lot of other people around the value that you're going to get from some of these tools.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And they're asking questions in a better way. They're trying to actually learn of the habits and how it's used, instead of just creating an echo chamber where people are just going to quickly answer to what they want them to say, so that the data is not actually, you know, valuable. It's not useful.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this actually kind of leads into one of the other questions in this game came from Reddit, but it was from kind of experienced devs, but, you know, the PMs on my team are trying to increase velocity by 20%. Things are getting tighter at the company, and they announced that they want everyone's velocity to be 20% higher. So even if you're a good performer, you don't have to have 20% more output. Has anybody ever heard of this policy like this? I think it's bound to fail. And definitely, of course, the number one snarky comment, which is great, just increase your estimates by 20%.
Right.
Just, you know, they're like, all these people are using story points. Okay. Well, velocity is based off of story points in most cases. Right. So everything went from being a 3 to a 5.
Right.
There you go. Done.
Just got bigger.
I mean, yeah. Like, you said small, it's now a medium. Like,
now it's a medium. Sure. And I've gained weight.
It goes back to Goodhart's Law again. Like, if you're trying to increase velocity, like, especially using a word like velocity, you're going to get nothing out of that except for making a bunch of people mad.
Right. You've hurt your culture. You've angered your teams, which they will now actually be less performant because they're complaining about you at the water cooler. So there's meetings in the beginnings and end of meetings and conversations that are now happening because they're angry. You've changed nothing in your workflow or your process of how you're building the software. You've actually gotten exactly the opposite of what you wanted from that ask. Because also, and it's not in this question here, but think about it. And I've seen this happen before, not the exact statement, but exactly what they're trying to do. The program managers, the project managers, right? Everyone who's managing that project now is coming down and asking for more updates, more meetings, more reviews. It's more conversations of, hey, what are you doing? What are you working on? Are you going to be done? Are you doing more? So they've also reduced the effectiveness of the actual people doing the work because they're spending more time in meetings, more time in stand-ups, more time writing emails, more time answering chats. Like, you've completely just gotten the opposite of what you wanted.
Yeah. And all of those things happen all of the time. And, you know, they're going to pressure devs probably in the same way of reducing estimates. So, you know, if the PMs are getting under pressure to increase velocity, but they're probably also under pressure to, you know, oh, is that really going to take? Oh, that's really not a five. That's not a large. That's a medium at best, man. Like, I could get that done over the weekend. Like, you're going to hear all kinds of stuff like that. And there's going to be pressure to get that done. And that's what leads into me. What leads into what you were saying is like, oh, well, we now have this 2-week sprint. We were supposed to get 15 points done, whatever the hell that means. And you're already in week 2 on Tuesday and you've only got 6 points done. It's like, well, yeah, well, this thing is, well, I mean, you basically pressured me into saying it was a 3. I thought it was a 5. And then it turned out to really actually be an 8 or whatever. Right. Like, yep. Yeah. And so, you know, you kind of get what you get. Now you're again, planning in air quotes is all screwed up. That's when project managers start freaking out. Program managers start freaking out. You need more status meetings. You're going to, my favorite, call a war room. And we're going to have all of you sit in a room and just stare at each other because that's going to work out better. Right. I guess you can't do that now that everybody's remote, but still, like, that's the crap that used to happen 10 years ago. Like,
well, now you have everybody on a video Zoom, right? So you jump on a virtual meeting all day and now you sit there staring at each other while you're supposed to be working.
Ugh.
It's a bad way to think about being more productive because it's not focusing on the right things, right? It's focusing on the wrong things. Story points in general, you and I have talked about before, but the mere fact of measuring something arbitrary like that, it's not helpful. I remember running teams as well as being on teams with those types of estimates where you spent more time defending it with people who weren't technical, and if you got out of the way, they couldn't sit at your computer and build what you were building. They didn't understand anything you were doing, yet everybody wanted to tell you how to do it. You know, and you're like, well, just get out of the way. I could have built this already. Yeah. You know, it goes back to the understanding of I used to code at night. I used to code on the weekends or early in the morning before work because during work, I couldn't get anything done. So they were paying me for 40. I was probably working 80, but I was happier working the off hours because I was getting a lot done compared to actually working when I was in the office because I couldn't get anything done.
And I think this leads into like, how do you actually solve this problem? Which, you know, I would make a bet that if you had 2 teams, I bet you they have large teams here. Just going to take a bet because a lot of people do. There's probably 2 teams of 8 to 10 people each. And there's a PM for each of those. And there's probably a project manager floating around there or scrum masters for, you know, floating around. And I would bet that if you would take, instead of having 2 teams doing estimates and doing all these plannings and everything else, and just say, over the next month, you two, you can make 4 teams of 2 out of that team, like a team of 8, and say, you're responsible for these 3 things. You're responsible for these 2 things. Do what you need to do to get this thing done in the next month. Here's the things that I think you should be able to accomplish. Let me know if it's going wrong. And you're going to be far more successful. And actually, I bet you're going to be way more than 20% more efficient that way.
Yeah.
Because you remove all the garbage you were talking about. You don't have it. You don't need someone to move my Jira card from, you know, started to in dev. Like you can just manage things for yourself and be able to work really efficiently.
Yeah. I think the other part of it would be outcome driven. Short-lived, outcome-driven teams focused on delivering something specific.
That's right.
Let that team norm, figure out what they need to do, and just go get it done. Measure their output. Now measure everything they do day to day. Measure the output. And if you measure the output, you'll get the output.
Yeah. And the bigger the organization, the more people need to justify how well things are moving and what they're doing and how it aligns to everything else. And there's just complete lack of trust across almost all of that, that makes it impossible to actually do anything.
Yeah.
And it's in its own way. One of the reasons why they all move so slowly and you know, once things start going awry, they do exactly what you would think that they would do is, we don't have enough process. We're going to double down and we're going to do more process and we're going to bring in another project manager and then a manager to watch the two project managers to watch these. We're going to have seven people watching three developers try to get something done.
And then wonder why they can't get it done.
And wonder why nothing gets done.
Yep. So on a very correlated note or situation, but a completely independent from this, is you and I have talked on and off for a while because I went back to paper and I turned off all my notifications and my machines are on focus and quiet and I have no stress compared to what I had 3 weeks ago. Even everything's back organized. Things are flowing the way they're supposed to be. I got rid of all the noise, which is exactly what we're talking about. And I think it's a good example.
Yeah.
Just going back to the basics of some of the stuff we're trying to do here and understanding why is it that a startup can move fast and be nimble, right? But a 20,000 person organization can't move out of their own way, right? And what's the difference there? And it is many factors, but there's a difference in that, right? We forget our core principles of working, our ways of working, our, you know, what works, what doesn't. I find it interesting. And in our conversation, because I'm doing it also in my own personal workflow and processes, and found that if I simplified it down to core pieces that support core habits, all of a sudden everything flows just fine. And so much stuff gets done in such a short amount of time. But once you start playing with a bunch of apps and you have to update this and then update this and change this, you get 10,000 notifications you can't keep up with and all your emails, you get overwhelmed, you get stressed, you get foggy brain, you know, because you don't know what you're supposed to do next. And then if everybody's asking you for stuff, now you're just stressed because now you're juggling all these half finished things. And there's a lot to learn from both of these things.
You're at that point, you're no longer a self-organizing team. And I think that's really where things go awry. People talk about self-organizing teams. They talk about people over process, you know, working document or working, you know, software over, you know, perfect documentation, those kinds of things. But you don't actually live them out on a day-to-day basis. And if you have, like, if you're using something like Safe, which is just crazy to me, but even if you're using something like Scrum, or Kanban, which can be okay.
Yeah.
But if you have a lot of these really hard processes, you're no longer self-organizing at that point. Like you can be in some ways, but in most you're not. It's, you have to go do all of these things. We need, you know, there is no one on earth that can convince me that estimates are worth a damn and that they're worth doing. Good luck. Just, you know, there's a funny video that we'll probably end up doing around estimates that I think will be pretty good. And we'll be able to put that out at some point, but your estimates are wrong and they will always be wrong. And there is no way to make them right without doing the thing that you need to do. And so know that, understand that, and just plan for it and say, well, I am willing to spend a week on this. Okay, great. It goes back to like the whole shape up, you know, appetites versus estimates, right? Like I am willing to spend a couple of developers for a month to work on this particular thing. As a leader, I think that's worth it. Okay, great. Like that, you don't need an estimate for that. You already have it. It's like, these guys, I got 4 weeks. Make something that works. I'm not going to be super dictatorial around, you know, exactly the design and everything else, but go make something that works and then we'll iterate on it. But spending a bunch of time doing these stupid estimates is just, I don't understand it and never, ever, ever will.
It's a curious thing that happens over and over again, right? How many times we talk with clients who want you to estimate out every single thing for something that you're going to do for them, that you're going to sell to them, right? The work you're going to do. You haven't even gotten on the ground yet. And we know from experience, every client is different. So even if we're going to do the same piece of work I've done for 100 other clients, your culture, your environment, your tech stack, your, you know, communication pathways, everything you have in your company is different. And yeah. thus, the estimate will be different. It could be close, but it's going to be different. And yet you'll spend hours trying to talk through and do that. And to your point, 99.9% of the time, you're doing change requests and you're doing other processes once you're inside to readjust it to exactly what it needs to be. So everybody is back on the same page.
Yeah.
But how much time could you save not doing that, like you said, mm-hmm. and then following something like Leader's Intent, which says I need X. Figure out how to get to X. And then let's do that.
Yeah.
Not tell me every step. Tell me the general steps. What's our strategy? What's our plan? Put a good strategy together. And then each of those self-organizing teams figures out what they need to do to work towards those goals to get that final mm-hmm. vision. And everybody works faster. Again, it's more like what a startup does when everybody gets together, has a really cool idea for something, and everybody just works like crazy to make it happen. Right? Less becomes more.
And you don't need a lot of the project managers and the program managers and all of these other people that are there just cranking out reports that no one reads and all of these other things. And you can actually get to doing real work. And, you know, I think there is, you know, I spent a lot of time earlier kind of trashing AI, but I think there's a new set of tooling that can be built off of some of these smarter technologies that I think will make a lot of those kinds of roles a bit redundant.
Mm-hmm.
And where you can automate some of that. And okay, great. Well, you can work the way that you want. You just give me the information and then I can, you know, kind of tie that back together. And that's where, you know, that's where things are going to start to get interesting. And there's a lot of cool space for some of that, but I'm still open on where I think some of that stuff's going to land. Cause again, goes back to the cost, but we'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
I do agree with your semi thought on, it could be useful because I do believe there are certain, it's the idea of right. Automate the things that we do that are simple and repetitive. So is AI in itself a way of automating some of those tasks that we do consistently week after week, day after day, mm-hmm. that are taking someone's time away from something more critical, more important? And can I leverage those tools in an effective way to increase the efficiency of the team or the person as a whole, mm-hmm. either way?
Wow.
But it's there to assist. It's not there to replace them. It's not there to be an automated AI bot writing code, you know, like there's a fine line.
Well, I kind of think about it as almost backwards from where some of the AI tools are. It's like, oh, let me help you code. Like, okay, well, great. Well, what if I was able to do that backwards and say, you know, here's what I did, AI. Like you go build a report off of that and, you know, be able to give that to the people that are interested. And it kind of goes to the hive mind thing I was kind of talking about earlier, but of great, like here's this thing. And now other people have access to that same kind of thing. Like that's where some stuff can start to get interesting because you don't need all of the process there. You don't need a lot of the other things. So there's some, definitely some interesting areas there where we might go.
Yeah, it is an area that I'm still very excited about and I think can do some really cool stuff. It's just, we need to figure out what that might be and we can't blindly follow where the hive mind of thought is going in a negative way, right? Everybody's just jumping on and going, everything has to be with AI and every tool has to have AI. And I mean, there are advantages. I got a new bed, the number bed here, right? The thing is smart enough to figure out when I'm going to go to bed, what setting I want the bed at. And it starts to adjust it before I even walk in the room. So there's advantages to some things, but that doesn't have to be AI. It's not really AI. It's just looking at my patterns and remembering my patterns, right? Give everything buzzwords.
Yep. The AI is one of the greatest marketing ploys that we've done over the last 10 years.
Oh yeah.
Like it, instead of, you know, between that and data science, those two things, you know, you go back, the data science has been around a long time, but you haven't called it that before. And it was always, you know, you were a statistician or, you know, those types of kind of names. And all of a sudden, once we came up with data science and, you know, we've kind of we just left machine learning in the background and,
yeah,
you know, well, all machine learning is just AI now. And it's like, well, yeah, but that's just really good pattern matching. Like, hold on a second. Like, that's not really intelligence. So, yeah. But we're all over the place here.
But like, to your point, I mean, AI started in the 50s, right? And so did machine learning, theoretically, right? It was all from the 1950s. It's not like this is brand new, but marketing took a hold of it and did an outstanding job marketing it.
That they have. And I think it was right. our friend
this week.
Huh? Yeah. And I think we can close it with our friend David from who brought up earlier, had a really interesting quote on LinkedIn the other day. It wasn't really a quote, it was just a more of a statement stating something along the lines of, you know, the tech bros are going to just, you know, unanimously vote to say that we've hit AI general intelligence and just say that it's true, even though we're nowhere close to it, just to be able to sell more crap. I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was basically that. And they're just going to dub that it's true, even though it's not. And that, you know, everybody's just going to believe it because, well, you know, everybody else is believing the hype and they need something new. They need a new thing to hype on.
Yes. Yeah. They're artificially moving the hype cycle in whatever direction they need to That's make right. money on it and sell products and move it forward and work whatever agenda on growing it for whatever business. Yes. But it doesn't mean we're actually getting new value from it.
Good luck editing this one.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. At least last one, we left and went and played golf. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.